Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This Saturday morning from 9 to 11 local time, the South Dakota Veterans Forum welcomes Duke Doering. He is a retired Chief Warrant Officer 5 and is an historian with the South Dakota National Guard. These presentations are open to the public. They take place at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum in Box Elder. Let's welcome Duke Doering back to the program now for a look at the South Dakota National Guard in World War II. Duke, welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
And let's start at sort of the beginning of an activation period. You know, take us back in time and tell me what the South Dakota National Guard really looks like at this time, and what are some of the early responses to what's happening in the European and Pacific theater.
Well, of course, the war had been going on in Europe for some time, but the United States didn't enter until December 8th, 1941, the day after Pearl Harbor. And on the December 8th, that same day, the Japanese also attacked the Philippines. And the Philippines has something to do with the National Guard story, so that's why I brought that up. But a full year, in fact, more than a full year before the United States officially entered World War II, they mobilized the entire United States National Guard, which was about 200,000 troops. And South Dakota had about 2,200 at that time, or about 1% of the National Guard in the United States at that time. And that's about what South Dakota has today, about 1% of the entire National Guard in the United States. Anyway, they mobilized the entire National Guard on 20 November 1940. Now, that's a year and 2 weeks before we ever got in the war. So It leads to you to believe that President Roosevelt knew for sure that we were going to be in that war.
Right, yes, the plans are underway. So where does the South Dakota National Guard go during that time? What are they doing for that year?
Okay, so on the 20th of November, when they mobilized the entire guard, half of the South Dakota National Guard, or roughly half, was called the 147th Field Artillery Regiment. And immediately they got orders to move to Fort Ord, California. And so they did. And they started preparations that very day, the 20th of November, 1940. And by the 3rd of December, the entire unit was in Fort Ord with their equipment. And so they had moved very quickly. Now, the 147th was stationed in various towns throughout eastern South Dakota, from Pierre to Aberdeen. Most of them were in Sioux Falls, but there were soldiers in Vermilion and Yankton and throughout eastern South Dakota. And they moved to Fort Ord immediately.
What kind of mobilization is that in the equipment sense? What are they taking with them?
Well, they're taking all the equipment that they had. They had quite a bit of equipment, considering the state of readiness for the United States at that time. The guns they had, artillery, of course, as far as the howitzers and the guns, they had the World War I guns that they had been issued when they were in World War I 20 years before that. Hmm. And so the United States really hadn't got the industry going, the war industry going at this point. So they still had the old World War guns, but they were pretty well equipped as far as individual things were concerned, like their rifles and their helmets and their backpacks and their uniforms. I mean, they were already there. The only lack was this World War I guns, and it wasn't their fault. It's just that the industry hadn't produced enough of them yet.
Right.
The new guns.
So when do they leave Ord, and where the where do they go next?
Well, they wind up in Australia, but I got to tell you how they got there. First,
okay.
And people always ask me, what are we doing in Australia when we're fighting the Germans and the Japanese, you know? But they leave Fort Ord on 1 year to the day after they were mobilized. They were mobilized November 20th 1940. And in 1941, that same day, November 20th, they board a troop ship called the Holbrook. And it was a cruise liner that had been converted to a troop ship. And they were going to the Philippines. General MacArthur had requested artillery support in the Philippines. So this was an artillery support, and they headed out towards the Philippines. This was on the 20th of November. They get to Hawaii, Pearl Harbor, on the 27th of November. That's more than a week before it is bombed by the Japanese. Mm-hmm. So our troops, the South Dakota troops, are already in Pearl Harbor before the Japanese attack. Well, they had 2 days of leave there. The troops got to travel around Pearl Harbor, around Hawaii for 2 days. And then on the 30th of November, they headed out for the Philippines to be support for General MacArthur there. Well, they get halfway to between Hawaii and the Philippines, and December 7th comes, and they attack Pearl Harbor. So these guys are out in the middle of nowhere in Japanese territory, really, on this troop ship with some support on the, some Navy support on the side. And so they have to go a different direction. So they turn and go, instead of going to the Philippines, they go south and go towards, their orders now are to go to Australia. Well, there have been no American troops in Australia at this point. But so they take off and they get down to the Fiji Islands about the 16th of December, and they're running out of food and water and everything because they were planning on being in the Philippines already. So they get to the Fiji Islands and resupply, and then they go down to Brisbane, Australia. And the day they arrive, it's on the 23rd, of December, and they're the first Americans, South Dakota Guards are the first Americans on Australia at that point.
I'm just, as you tell the story, I'm thinking, you know, beyond the history, just what it must have been like to have been in Pearl Harbor and then somehow receive the news of what has happened and sort of process all that. There was so much that was unknown and surprising. At that moment, it must have been quite, you know, quite a journey, and the letters home, and it must reflect a lot of uncertainty, I'm guessing.
I suppose it's a place you didn't want to be, right. You know, on there.
So do they connect with General MacArthur? Are they part of this, you know, of what he is asking them to do? Does that eventually happen?
Well, here's what happens now. They're down in Brisbane, and most of the they're expecting the Japanese to invade at Darwin, which is in the northern part. So they go from Brisbane up to Darwin, and Australia, and they're kind of the Japanese are bombing Australia now too, especially at Darwin, and they're expecting, these South Dakota guys are expecting that the Japanese are going to invade, and they're really going to be in trouble because there's not a lot of force in Australia now to repel this Japanese attack. So they're already in trouble. Well, for some reason, the Japanese take air attacks on Australia, but they never try to invade. Well, then we go back over to the Philippines where General MacArthur is. And President Roosevelt tells him to get out of there. And you remember when he retreated from, he didn't retreat, he left on a PT boat in March. He loaded his wife and child and his entourage on to four PT boats in the Philippines and circumvented the Japanese Navy, the Navy that had blockaded everything there. And they got through that. And so they landed, they got the PT boats off to a little island called Mendocino, which was owned by Dole Pineapple, and it was kind of out of the war zone. But they had an airstrip there, and so MacArthur's orders were to get to Australia and set up his command for the South Pacific War. So on that night, they hadn't fly at night because they would have get shot down if they had tried to go in the daytime. So they had two C-47 planes there. And they loaded him and his outfit up, his entourage, and they flew to Darwin. And they flew overnight. They left about midnight. And they came in just about sunup. And when they got there, the Japanese were bombing again. So they had to divert and go from Darwin over to a place called Bachelor Field, which was 60 miles away. And when General MacArthur landed at Bachelor Field, the controlling force at Bachelor Field was Battery B of the 147th Artillery from Mitchell, South Dakota.
Duke Doring, this is just a really fascinating chapter and just a hint at what your presentation will be this weekend. And we're going to tease listeners and make them come out and see you in person to hear so much more of the story. We really appreciate your time. Thanks, Duke.
And thank you.